And what is up, Pewter peeps? Welcome in to the all new Pewtercast, your spot for all of your favorite Bucks news and analysis and hot takes and other, of course, alongside Ren Dax. I am Steve Carney. It is great to have you here this week. This week, we are continuing our look around the NFC South as we want to thank Mike Neighbors for joining us to talk Saints a couple of weeks ago. And this week, we take a look at the Atlanta Falcons. And there is nobody that knows the Falcons better. And really, there's nobody that knows pro football better than our good friend D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who joins us here this week. D. Orlando, thank you so much for taking time out of your what is now the downtime of the season to join us.
Yes, Steve, thanks for having me, and I appreciate the kind words. Looking forward to talking with you and Ren today about some of the issues facing the Atlanta Falcons.
So D. Orlando, I mean, it's funny. I thought that Ren was gonna ask the obvious question, but he leaves it for me, thankfully. Because we have to start with, the big story of the Falcons offseason, and that is the trade of Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans. And this was a something that kind of happened. I want to say it happened kind of out of nowhere because it didn't seem like. Yeah, but really. I mean, I certainly think that, if what happened on Shannon Sharpe's radio show didn't happen, I don't think that the Falcons would have looked to move on from Julio Jones here this offseason. What do you think actually was the feeling, the temperature between the Falcons and Julio Jones before what happened on the radio and how that escalated things, Dear Orlando?
Yeah, no question about it. Given time to go back and look at everything and the red flags that we missed along the way, this rift didn't happen overnight. You can go back to Matt Ryan's contract, 6 years, $150 million. Shortly thereafter, Julio goes in and wants his contract torn up. He had just been made the highest paid receiver in the league. They had renegotiated his contract 3 different times. So that still wasn't enough. He got a $25 million signing bonus in September of 19, and still wasn't enough for him to, be happy with his situation here with the Atlanta Falcons. So then you get the transition and the firing of Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. And a new regime comes in, and Arthur Smith is represented by Jimmy Sexton, who's also Julio's agent. So, there had to be some thinking that, hey, maybe they could smooth this out and he can play for, his representative's client. But, that didn't work. And so at that point, Julio said, hey, we split up. His vision for the team and their vision for the future didn't mesh. And, he decided to ask for a trade. And this is all before we even get to the Shannon Sharpe interview, whatever mm-hmm. that is. And at that point, the sides have already broken up. They're taking calls. They're trying to trade them before the draft. They don't like the compensation they're getting. And then finally, perhaps after the appearance, they decide to, we don't really want him in the building. He called us losers. We'll take what we have, the best offer on the table, which was the second round and fourth round picks from the Titans with a sixth round pick in 2023 going back to the Titans. So that's, in retrospect, that's the best we have on how that whole thing went down. The public comments were tame, but we understand that the behind the doors comments were not.
Bucks fans are, more than happy to see Julio go. Especially in the Mike Smith years, where he famously said we played 22 coverages against Julio, where he went for, I don't know, what was it, like 400 yards and 2 TDs, and Julio goes, nope, they just played quarters the whole game. So yes, adios, goodbye, Julio. But you talked a little bit about sort of like the signs we might have missed. And you said that, you know, they had broken up before even the Shannon Sharpe thing. They're trying to get, you know, they were trying to get what they could, putting Julian on the market, you know, behind the scenes before the draft. So like, where's the biggest, you know, why would Julio want to go? I mean, it sounds like, you know, they gave him more money, kept restructuring his contract. Anything asked for, like, why wasn't it enough? What was Julio's dealio?
Well, you know, after they, you know, blew up the botched the Super Bowl, they come back that next year and, you know, they're on the 1 yard line in Philly. They win that game. You know, they got a 2 year run, decent playoff run. But since then, that's when the contracts start going haywire, and the team is 18-30. So he's witnessed the failed rebuild of the offensive line, the failed rebuild of the defense. They maxed out the offensive contracts because they were going to draft the defense, and the players would be on rookie contracts, and, you know, they keep the train rolling. But the players they drafted couldn't play. You know, Jalen Collins is gone, second-round pick. Deidre Sanaad, a third-round pick. Duke Riley, a third-round pick. Tack McKinley, a first-round pick. So they were whiffing on defense, and Julio's watching all this and, you know, probably not going to play much more than 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. Not up for a rebuild in his mind that it's a rebuild. And, you know, you don't have a championship-level team. So in Julio's mind, so he just, you know, figures out, hey, I want out of here. They got Tom Brady down in Tampa now. You know, we're not going anywhere fast here. So he decides that, you know, they can't win. He wants out. And they were able to grant him his wish. He's out. He's with an AFC contender. He's out of conference. And, you know, they bent over backwards to make him happy. And even to the end, they did so. So the Falcons could be commended for that, maybe not helping their team out in the long run. But, you know, once they saw he was not going to be a functional part of their team anymore, they did what they could to get rid of him and satisfy his wishes to go to a quote-unquote winning team.
Okay, well, that shed some light on it. So it wasn't like a clash of personalities or offense philosophies or team building. It was just kind of like they missed a lot on the draft. I'm only going to play like 5 more years. I want to try to, you know, make some playoff runs here. And now we're going, you know, the rebuild didn't work on the offensive line, didn't work on the defense. You know, we're not, like you said, we're not going to contend for a little while. So, you know, thank you for everything you've done, but, you know, I'd like to be shown the door if that's possible. So so it was no like ill will. It was just like, hey, thanks for everything, but I'm gonna go ring chase here.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, one of the issues out there, one of the things is that he was distraught over the firing of Dan Quinn. And,
really?
Yeah. And, you know, they were supposed to be really tight and everything. We'd heard that there was a rift there. So, you know, that they weren't even talking at the end. So I asked him that in the interview in Tennessee. I was like, hey, has this got anything to do with your relationship with Dan Quinn and him being fired? And he said, no, nothing to do with him at all. It was between us and we split up. It was between him and the team, had nothing to do with Coach Quinn getting fired, and so forth. So it's his vision and their vision were the, you know, at the end of the day, what we have on the record is for why he wanted to get traded.
Okay. How much is the, I guess the, you talked about the struggle on the offensive line, but the struggle in the running game as well. How big is that in what caused the Falcons to take the steps backwards that they've done over the last couple of years?
Yeah. In that whole contract scenario, they overpaid Devontae Freeman, got nothing for it. 2 years of nothing. After that, Bobby Turner, who just received the Dr. Z award from the PFWA, the running backs coach left. Once he left, Freeman wasn't a factor. So they botched the running game. From both sides, from the running back side and the line side, you know, they threw a lot of draft picks and a lot of free agent money at Jamin Brown and James Carpenter, and then drafted two kids, Caleb McGarry and Chris Lindstrom. You know, that didn't work. Devontae Freeman couldn't run the ball anymore. And you know, last year they couldn't get any short yardage gains. They were stuck in the red zone. You know, no blocking, no running. And, you know, Matt Ryan's at his best when he's throwing off of a running back, when he's throwing off of Michael Turner, Devontae Freeman when he was running. You know, didn't do so good. Steven Jackson at the end didn't help him much. But their best years is when they have a big runner that they can play action fake off of, and Matt Ryan can throw the ball around to different receivers. So the run game, the collapse of the run game, paying Dante Freeman when you had Tevin Coleman. You didn't have to pay him. And then after he missed the block in the Super Bowl, I might not let him back on the plane. So so they you know, the general manager fell in love with his guys. You know, if he drafted you, you know, you played to the bitter end and he got you money. And if you weren't any good, they kept you around. They didn't even you know, if the guys were any good, they even brought you back. You know, Rashard Hegman was that bounced out of the league, and they brought him back for another tryout, for another second-round bust. So he was married to his draft picks, and that may have cost him in the end, you know, being married to his draft picks.
All right. Well, new coach, new GM, new year. You do have the Matt Ryan contract sort of hanging around the neck of the organization. And now we're in a free agency. What did you think the Falcons needed to do? What did they do? And how do you think that overall, you know, when at the end, how do you think the Falcons did through free agency, even with, you know, sort of like being handcuffed with a contract like Ryan's?
Yeah, Ren, what happened was they had to let a lot of players go. Even going back to 2 years ago, Austin Hooper to Cleveland, Devondre Campbell to Arizona, now Green Bay. You know, quality players that you drafted, you couldn't keep because you didn't have any money. And then this year, you let all your safeties go, and you have no money to sign Alex Mack. You know, 35-year-old Alex Mack's probably going to be better than this second-year center or the first-year center they drafted this year. So, but you didn't have any money to pay him, so he could not come back. Ricardo Allen signed with the Bengals. And that's how you tell if the players can still play. They sign with somebody else. That meant you couldn't come to a meeting of the minds, even if it is the Bengals. And then, of course, in Keanu Neal's case and Demonte Casey, they go to Dallas. So you lost, you know, three starters basically from your open day lineup. You know, it was the 29th ranked defense, though. So who's going to really go to the walls for them? 32nd pass defense. So they weren't able to sign anybody. They weren't able to sign any of their own talent for the last couple years. And that's going to be the case for the next 2 years. And then this year, they were able to get some quality, low-budget veterans. We're talking about guys like Daron Harmon, who started 16 games for the Lions. He's going to be your starting strong safety. Eric Harris from the Raiders, your starting free safety. Barkevious Mingo, a special teams utility player for the Bears and about eight other teams. You sign him. Your big free agency signing is Mike Davis, the backup running back from Carolina. He's now your featured back. So, you know, that's what they did. They didn't have any money, and they signed. They tried to get some quality at the other end of the spectrum of some players that could at least come in and help them out, maybe be bridge players until you get, you know, some talent in here through the draft.
Yeah, I actually want to talk about one of the guys. You mentioned Mike Davis, but how big of a guy is Cordarrelle Patterson going to be for this Falcons team? You know, I've always
another
been a
buck
big
killer.
Yeah, that's another guy that seems to always crush the
have his best game of the year against the Bucs.
Always.
Yeah, no doubt. They list him as a running back. Now, we all know he can return kicks. He's one of the top returners in the game. So that's an upgrade there. Now he's the number two running back, the way this thing's looking right now. And, you know, they promised him the ball in various places. New England started running him a couple years ago because, you know, he's a first-round pick as a wide receiver, and I can't understand why he can't run routes because he's still fast. Or he can't catch or something went wrong with the wide receiver thing for him. So just hand him the ball off and he's still fast and big. So that looked good in New England. Chicago tried to do more of it last year, mm-hmm. and some of those Chicago people are on the staff now. Dave Ragone's the quarterback's coach or OC, even though Arthur Smith will call his own plays. So in the limited action, because he didn't come to OTAs, but he was at minicamp, and he looked good running off tackle on air. That's all we got. You know, they all look good at this time of the year, running around in shorts on air. So he looked good doing that, and we'll see how it goes in training camp. We'll get the pads on, see what Cordarrelle, the running back, looks like a little bit more.
So we lost some starters on defense. Because of the salary cap issues, you had to do some bargain basement, you know, pull some guys, some vets, some experience from, you know, tier two or tier three free agent type of guys to fill some holes before the draft. Here comes the draft. Before the draft, what did you think the Falcons needed? What did they go after? And, you know, at the end of the day, of course, you know, I'm not asking you to judge the draft class, but do you think that or were you and the fans happy with the direction the Falcons went in the draft?
Yeah, I wasn't at first. I thought I did give them an A- in my draft review, but given their inability to block, Matt Ryan being sacked 131 times the last 3 years, and you know, I got the hurries and you know, the hurries and the hits. When you add those together, it's like 20% of his dropbacks, he's getting sacked, hurried, or hit, and that's way too much.
Yeah, it is.
I was thinking Penei Sewell made sense to me at four. He comes in, plays left guard, push him out to left tackle later, solidifies your biggest weakness. So they didn't do that. There was no pass rushers to take in the draft at four, so I understood that. But then the perplexing part for us was, hey, Matt Ryan's 36. You're married to him redid his contract, so he's going nowhere with his cap numbers. But you had the opportunity to get Justin Fields, and mm-hmm. you didn't do it. So you didn't do it. You got Matt Ryan for 2-3 years, and you know, if you're back at the top, then you have the pick of Rattler and all these other kids next year. But Kyle Pitts is the balancing part of it. You know, yeah. You got Kyle Pitts. He's a major weapon, great wingspan, you know, highest tight end ever taken. But, you know, it won't matter if Matt Ryan's back there running for his life again. So it makes sense, but they're banking on the fact that they believe they can fix this line. And they went to it in the draft twice, in third round with Jalen Mayfield and the fourth round with Drew Dahlman. And, you know, you all know that rookies don't come in and not in the third and fourth round and fix your offensive line. So, you know, maybe they push the guys that are here to be better. And maybe, you know, with the new coach who's coming from college, Dwayne Ledford did a great job with the kid at NC State and then Bechter at Mekhi Bechter at Louisville. But, I mean, my experience, and I was taught by Bob McGinn in Milwaukee when we covered the Packers together, that you want the old salty veteran offensive line coach who's seen it and been through all the wars. So young college coaches from college coaching the line usually don't work. But we'll see how it goes for Coach Ledford. He comes highly recommended. But I was always told to look for that old crazy guy coaching the offensive line.
All I keep thinking of is Bob McKittrick. That's a guy that was around forever.
Yeah, Tom Lavad, Alex Gibbs, my man that was here. It'll come to me.
Joe Bugle, you know, those guys. I want to ask you, because both the Falcons and the Buccaneers now have a Florida quarterback that's going to be learning behind a very established veteran. You know, we've got Kyle Trask here in Tampa. The Falcons have Felipe Franks now on their depth chart. You know, does Felipe really have an opportunity to maybe take over the backup role, or is that just, you know, he's here just to kind of push AJ McCarron?
Yeah, we asked the coach about him, and he was down talking to all the rookies. You know, usually coaches has something good to say about the rookie. You know, his undrafted rookie. Tell us, you know, Yeah, it looks good warming up there, throwing against to the backup receivers. But we couldn't get anything positive, so we got to go on what we saw. He didn't look out of place out there. Big kid, big good looking kid. They were throwing mostly inside the number, so he was doing fine there. But yeah, he has a legitimate shot to be the. I don't think he could be the two right away, but you could certainly develop him for action down the road. I mean, AJ McCarron's been around forever. He's 30. He's only played 17 games. He's got the best job in football, which is the backup quarterback who doesn't play a lot and makes a couple million dollars. So and he's been holding it down in a couple different places, Cincinnati and Houston. So, not really. You just want a guy that can get you through a game if something happens. And I don't even know if AJ McCarron is that. But certainly Felipe can be maybe that and more. That's his goal in life right now, is to get to where he can function and run an NFL game, and then maybe develop into a starter. It's happened. We've seen some guys do that, and that's the boat that he's in right now.
Something you touched on a little bit earlier that it's perplexed a lot of people, and I want to know sort of what the Falcons brass has told the fan base and the beat reporters, and you flat out said it, like Justin Fields is sitting there at 4. You're in a rebuild. Even you have, yes, Kyle Pitts, amazing mismatch, great offensive weapon, but then like you said, like, well, if you can't get him the ball, and then on the flip side, you had 3 defensive starters leave on a bad defense, and now you brought in, maybe 2 of them are better, or maybe they're all the same, or maybe all 3 are better, but that bounces you up from like 29 and 32 to what, 25 and 28. So, what is the Falcon? And everyone's scratching their heads going, Justin Fields is there. Look, like, everyone thinks from the outside looking in that the Falcons looks at their staff, looks at their talent on their team, and they're delusional. So what are they thinking? Because it seems like they're going for it, but the roster says no. You don't have a chance. Right. So what are they telling you guys? Like what they, what's their plan here?
Yeah. They were kind of offended. they're like, we're not here to lose. We're here to win. And we're like, really? So they were offended. The coach was irate almost. We're not here to rebuild, and we're here to win football games. I think that comes from the owner, because the football people know what's going on. So mm-hmm. The owner doesn't want to admit to the fans who kind of backed off from paying these PSL monies and showing up to games. And he can't very well tell them, hey, we're rebuilding, stick with us through these tough times, but I need my 40,000 G's for my PSL. So that was bad business. So, their business posture doesn't line up with the football posture, which is, they're rebuilding. They're going to try to win on the rebuild. And they're selling that, hey, even though they were 4-12 last year, they lost a lot of games by 1 score. So they lost 8 games like that. So, hey.
So did every other team.
Yeah, yeah. but nobody did it quite like they did.
No. No one blew 30-point leads week after week after week.
Right. Nope. And not falling on onside kick, No,
I forgot about that.
It was amazing.
Cowboys are thanking their lucky stars.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
So they, I'm obviously the front office is saying, oh, we're not going to go 4-12. But what do you think they're going to? How much above 4-12 can they be? Can they go 6-10? Can they somehow get to 500 this year?
Well, I did the playoffs schedule like everybody does when the schedule comes out. You have a couple mm-hmm. beers, you go win, lose, whatever. And so I split the division, which is probably not going to happen. They'll probably lose 2 to Tampa again, but split the division, mm-hmm. and then you do quarterback versus quarterback. And then later on, I'll do coordinators versus coordinators and come up with something. So doing that before they traded Julio, I got to 10-5.
Really?
The last two. Yeah, I'm giving them every tip of the ball when you do okay. that.
Every close game they won.
Yeah, they're going to fall on the kick this time. They're going to not blow the 30-point lead. You know, give them all that this time. And so I get to 10-5, and then I'm like, oh, they got to go to Buffalo in December?
Yeah, that's bad.
Then the Saints. So 10-7 is the absolute best. More like 7-10 is probably the more realistic look for these guys going into this season.
Okay, because there's a lot of people. I shouldn't say a lot. There's a few, like when, you know, NFC South fans, the Buccaneers, I should Buccaneer fans, sort of break down the NFC South. Like there's a small contingent that are kind of fearing the Falcons. Like the Panthers are in a I kind of fear the Panthers a little more than the Falcons, but the Panthers are, you know, they got Sam Darnold. They still have offensive line problems. The defense is still very young. So they're a year or two away. You know, the Saints, who knows? Like somehow Sean Payton's going to work his voodoo magic and pull a couple games out of his butt. And they're going to have like 10, 11 wins because he's an excellent play caller and game manager. For the most part on the game manager part, but his schemes from week to week somehow keep the game close and they pull these games out. And they still have a very nice roster, no matter who's at quarterback. But then the Falcons, you look at them, you're like, okay, they're going to put up a lot of points, but they can't stop anybody. And it's the same thing from last year, but there's a lot of fans out there that are like, I think the Falcons are going to be better. Like maybe they're just betting on that the defense can't be any worse than it was last year, so there's nowhere to go but up. So, you know, so I figured I was going around with this question is that I think outside of Atlanta and the NFC, well, I should say NFC South Buccaneers fans think that the Falcons have a shot of making the playoffs this year. And it might be a dangerous team. Are they crazy or does it have to be one of those years where the ball bounces their way? Like the end of the year, like, you know, those eight games we lost that was, you know, less by 7 points. We won all those. Mm-hmm. Is that what's going to have to happen?
You know, that's unrealistic. What else has got to happen? Yeah. Rick? If they're going to be competitive like that and they're going to be in all these games, I mean that Dean Pease will have done one of the best coordinating jobs in the 21st century. He would have come in. You're going to put in 6 new starters the way I'm counting right now. You got linebackers. You got Deion Jones, Mikael Walker. So you're okay there. You can't stop the run. Yeah, you get to the passer. You know you can't unless he blitzes everybody. Fowler's a wild card. What do you get from him? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you're going to have a revamped secondary that's not going to be – they're not going to give up 290 yards again. They might. They might give up 260. Let's cut that down to 260, and they move from 32nd to 28. So then maybe you're in the games. You're blitzing. You're doing different things. You're playing a multiple 3-4-4-3, and the defense is coming up with the ball and getting sacks and so forth. That's their best-case scenario, is that this defense overperforms in the first year of a transition to a 3-4. And we know that never really happened. So, but if they do that and they somehow pull that off, then you're talking about maybe having a shot at flipping those games and getting to the playoffs.
I would be very, very surprised to see. And I think everybody in the football world would be like, what is going on here? And you're, like you said, Dean Pease with the defensive coordinator job of the century. He would end up being, you know, defensive coach of the year, and he would get all these awards if that were to happen. I want to ask you, D. Orlando, because of your ranking inside the Pro Football Writers Association, I know how difficult last year was for everybody. I was part of it with the Bucs Radio Network, and we had all sorts of, you know, it's Zoom and not having the access that we're used to having with the players, with the coaches, you know, everything that's going on. Now that the pandemic is starting to subside, you know, what are you seeing access-wise with the Falcons? How was OTAs? How was minicamp access-wise? And what are you expecting when you go to training camp here in 6 weeks, when it comes to access to the players? And then what do you expect to see for the regular season?
Yeah, today was a big day. We found out that the NFL and NFLPA have come together on some preliminary plans that includes in-person interviews for the vaccinated. The unvaccinated will not be allowed in the press box or in the field or in the media. So, you know, for the folks that are vaccinated, this was a great day. And for the folks that are not and got to work through it, it probably wasn't. But, you know, on-field interviews, in-person availability is going to be up. You know, the Zoom questions, you had to share the space with folks. You know, just two questions in some cities. You know, you got to build a story off of whatever they say. And you don't get to follow up and, you know, continue your line of questioning. It got quite frustrating at the end. And what we were able to put together for the readers and the fans of the team and so forth. So glad to hear that news today. Optimistic that, you know, things are going to get greatly, will be greatly improved. Haven't seen the big elephant in the room, which is open locker room.
Right,
I can see that not happening because you're mixing vaccinated people in that regard. So there might be a vaccinated period, you know, to get players coming off the field, which, you know, we used to do in the good old days anyway. We didn't really, if you got your players coming off the field, you didn't have to go in a locker room. So, you know, you'd have your list of guys and try to get them, and, you know, maybe give them a heads up that you wanted them. And, you know, the PR people weren't in the way trying to orchestrate things. So, you know, that's where I hope we're headed in lieu of what we don't believe will be a totally open locker room situation, but more open face-to-face access. And Lindsey Jones, our current president, is doing a great job working with the league office and with DeMaurice and his folks at the NFLPA. To really move us into a better space for this coming season. I'm really proud of work she's doing, carrying on the fine work of the Pro Football Writers of America.
I'm so glad you brought that up. This has been a, when last year, when the open locker rooms got banned and sort of like the on field stuff and only so many credentialed medias could be there, I completely understood it. But I also saw in the future where a corporation as big as the NFL and the way they protect their shield, I started saying like, hey, and I didn't even know there was a Pro Football Writers of America until I looked it up. I'm like, is there anybody out there that fights for these guys, fights, you know, for their access? And I said, okay, good. And I started tweeting out, you know, to all like 1,000 of my followers. So it went viral. No. like, hey, Pro Football Writers of America, you guys got to start fighting for this right away. Like right now, like, okay, I understand what we're doing now. Back off. Can't go here. Can't go there. But I need some insurances like right now about how it's going to go back to normal. And then here we go through the draft. And now we're starting mini camps and it's a little bit better. And then the NFL is not saying anything about open locker rooms and the whole fiasco at the French Open. And now everyone's talking about, you know, our pressers even, you know, like what's up with the press conference. And it seems slowly like a lot of things, you know, as society starts to at least individuals start to grab their own personal rights back, things start to get chipped away at certain institutions. And right now through the NFL, it seems to be Professional Football Writers of America. Now the listeners don't know, but you used to be the president of Professional Football Writers of America, or Professional Writers. How is it?
It's PFWA, Professional Football Writers of America.
There you go. There we go. Oh, we're grabbing something. There we go. Oh, look, he busted out his gavel. He's
got the gavel.
So, I mean, you said Lindsey Jones. I'm going to go do some research on her as soon as we finish this interview.
She's great.
Like, but you're done. You've retired, but you still have friends in the organization, and you have your ear to the ground. Like, what is going on? Like you said, they're doing work with the NFL, but like, what are they asking for? What are you trying to get back? Where are you getting pushback from? Where is this negotiation at right now? Because it's very important to me as a fan, because I don't want to see another year of stupid Zoom calls where everyone's turned into a goddamn pool reporter.
Yeah, no question about it, Ren. Yeah, I was president from 2013 to 15. I was first vice before that for 2 years and second vice for 2 years before that, and still serve on several of the access committees. And helped to rewrite the injury reporting laws when and the availability laws when the coaches tried to restrict us. And I've been available for, you know, the current officers to, you know, help them out when we need, you know, some legal. I'm a lawyer, too, so we need some legal expertise. I'm kind of our high artillery person to go in and help with that.
Bring in the big guns.
But, yeah, I can go get the old, my old law firm buddies to help us out when we need that. But where we're at is in a good place right now. Like vaccinated players, you know, it's in their media policy. The NFL has embraced that. The media has helped build this empire of theirs through the being the conduit from the teams to the fans. That's what we do. We're not. It's not about me and how I feel about the Falcons. It's about what the fans want to know about the Falcons. So I'm the guy that gets the information and writes the stories and does the podcast to give the, you know, information to the fans that might want to buy a Julio Jones jersey and support their team in that way. So the league respects it. It goes back to Pete Rozelle. It's the era where the media was a big part of it, starting kind of with, you know, the media is at the pool with Joe Namath when he's making the prediction at 69. That wasn't no accident. I'm sorry. But yeah, I haven't been poolside with anybody in the recent years. But, you know, that's the history and the origin of the relationship between the league and the media. And the league is the league would prefer us to be there, whereas some teams are you know, more lenient and willing than others. Like Dallas had open availability during the draft. You know, they want, you know, they know they got to feed that beast. They're the America's team. They have one of the biggest media contingents in the country. Yeah. Green Bay, they'd rather have us there than them trying to, you know, wrestle up two or three people for a Zoom call. You know, you can't get enough in the digital era of the coverage of your team. So the league knows that they can't restrict those that coverage at a time when the media is has changed to a 24-hour news cycle where we need more access, if anything, than less access. And so a lot of teams have embraced that. A few, notably, one of them in the NFC South has not. The Saints, they're trying to. And of course, New England. When I was president, I got more calls about Sean Payton. He's got I'm on speed dial with him and Bill Belichick, but Stacey James up in New England. But I applaud the Tampa Bay staff. They've always been great through thicker thin, and they were just recognized as the Zell winner for media access and accessibility throughout the whole country. You know, when they did sign Brady. They had a national call with, I think, almost 200 people were on that call. I was on the call.
I was too.
I didn't get my question, but that's okay.
Me neither.
but it was about the access, I guess. So I think that's where we are, Ren. We're not going to get all the way back there in 1 year.
Why not?
The big thing is the vaccination, the players. If teams 100% vaccinated, they'll probably have an open locker room, or they might have a vaccinated period. But hey, what if Matt Ryan's not vaccinated? He's never in the open period. It's gonna be some guys you don't get at all,
right?
Because of that. But they've made it. It's looking like you've been incentivized to get vaccinated.
Did you read that?
Cover the game, and you can't cover the game if you're not in the press box.
Yeah. With the players, it's like if you're vaccinated, you get tested every 2 weeks. You come and go as you please. If you're not vaccinated, you're tested every day, and you got to wait 4 days to even enter the building. I mean, it's very. I mean, I understand it completely, and you know, as a person who's very big on personal rights. I feel for the players and reporters that don't want to get vaccinated, but my selfishness as a fan is just like, hey, you know, they're not asking for your firstborn child. Just take the shot and let's just go.
So that's where we're at. And hopefully we'll get to a better place for the benefit of the fans.
Yes.
Especially for you all, when the team is the hottest team in the league right now, trying to repeat as Super Bowl champions. And the fans in Tampa have been through some rough times down there. Ooh. So they deserve all of this.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right.
Definitely.
Thank you very much for your insight. Because yeah. I was really looking when I saw this, I'm like, this guy was the president, used to be the president of pro football. I'm like, oh, good. Because that's been my soapbox for like a year now.
Yeah, we've been banging the drum for you, working with the various staffs around the league and monitoring, you know, like Dallas was getting 8 players. They were sending their Dallas.com people in there and getting transcripts from 5 players and then bringing 4 to the Zoom. So they were getting 9 players, where some teams would get like 2-3 players after a game. So, yeah. You know, we studied all that and turned all our information into the league and let them know that we've been monitoring the access throughout this whole period.
All right. Well, I feel like I'm going to be tweeting at you a lot lately in the next couple of weeks. So I apologize ahead of time.
Don't do it while he's on vacation, Ren. Come on. He's got NFL
never sleeps.
Oh, D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal Constitution. You can follow him on Twitter at D. Orlando AJC. Check out the Bow Ties Chronicle podcast as well. He does a fantastic job with that. And of course, you can read his stuff in the Atlanta Journal Constitution at AJC.com. D. Orlando, thank you so much for giving us 45 minutes of your time. It's been an absolute blast, and we hope that we're doing this again at least a couple of times during the regular season when we get Bucks and Falcons going in the regular season. So thank you, my friend. It's been a blast.
You're welcome, Steve and Ren. Thanks for having me, and it's been a blast, and look forward to maybe coming back on your show during the season. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, anytime, man. I've been doing this 6 years. You've been one of my favorite interviews. I like
absolutely.
You a lot.
You've always been fantastic to me as well. My time in the Bucks Radio Network, and I'm looking forward to this as well.
Yeah. All right. Bring your gavel.
All right, we'll bring it. All right. Take care, guys.
And there he goes. That is D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here joining us on the PeterCast. First off, I just want to get into some of the things that he mentioned here in a second. First off, shout out to Kyle Driver, who of course gave us the $2 super chat early on. So thank you, Kyle. Sorry we weren't able to get to you.
Happy Wednesday. Must be a very busy man.
Yes, and misspelled, but that's okay.
I can't spell Wednesday. I still can't spell Wednesday.
But
yeah, it is misspelled. Isn't it?
Yes, yeah, that's okay.
I want Kyle to know that I didn't point that out.
My mother was an English teacher for 31 years, and by the way, she's probably watching. She's definitely going to listen to the podcast. So shout out to Mom as well.
Hey, Mama Carney.
So I really thought I was kind of surprised because for me being kind of a casual guy outside of football season when the Bucks are playing, you know, I become much more of a casual NFL mm-hmm. connoisseur. The Julio Jones stuff before the Shannon Sharp, that was kind of interesting to me, like knowing just how fractured the relationship
was. He was done way before anybody even knew about it, and apparently was on the market way before anybody knew about it. You know, and it just seemed like, you know, according to D. Orlando, that, you know, the Falcons did everything they could. And it just came down to, like, he thought, this is what I think, this is what I took out of it, that Julio Jones thought that that Super Bowl run team, that window was going to be a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. And then as he explained that, you know, 2 years later, they were like 8-30 or something, or it couldn't be like, but they were like 10.
Yeah, 18-30.
So the next 3 years after, you know, that Super Bowl run. And he's like, yeah, it's just not going to happen. And I want to go. So, I don't know. It's like you see somebody like Larry Fitzgerald who just like sticks it out. But you see somebody like Julio, I guess he just wants to win a ring, and neither of them are wrong. It just seems maybe if Julio got his story out and just kind of said what I said, I would feel better, because the whole thing feels dirty, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it feels like there is a fractured relationship between the Falcons, and it's like, okay, we're broken up. Well, why? Because if that's your explanation, okay, hey, Julio, why'd you leave? Oh, we just, you know, we're done. We broke up. Okay, why? He doesn't give an explanation, mm-hmm. you know, and it was a little bit of like, maybe it was, you know, people, personalities in the locker room, including the head coach. Maybe it was because he wanted to go and ring chase, or, you know, or maybe it was because Matt Ryan got a big contract and that made him mad. Like, there's lots of maybes, and Julio's not clearing anything up. So,
yeah, that was the thing that I was like, okay, so he got his contract renegotiated three different times.
Yeah.
And then wanted it torn up and redone again, you know, whereas if it's just hilarious.
Because that's prima donna, sort of like OBJ type of shenanigans.
Well, and the thing for me was that you have, it's the exact opposite of somebody like, say, you know, Cameron Brady or Tom Brady. You know, both of those guys have renegotiated their contracts, but to give up money so they could help with the team, you know, bring in some bigger pieces. You know, Tom Brady did that a couple of times in New England. I'm not gonna put Cameron Brate in that same same level. But I'm saying
he just wants to stay in Tampa.
Yes, they forced him.
Moving such a hassle. I'll just let how much? What? Okay, 6 to 8 to 6. Okay, next year. Six to three. Whatever. I mean, I don't even play. So
whatever. Brookie can support me in the lifestyle to which I've become accustomed to. But Tom Brady a number of times in New England negotiated his contract down
and they
to
kept
give
winning.
His team more maneuverability in free agency to be able to bring in the pieces that he needed in order to keep winning.
And the team and the quarterbacks that didn't ended up never like sort of panning out, like Drew Brees. You know, like he never renegotiated. He moved money. But he didn't take less money. He just kept kicking it down the road. Mm-hmm. That never worked out, you know. And you know, the Saints kept having to rob Peter to pay Paul, or Peter to pay Paul, and now it's going to bite him in the butt for the next 3 years. You know, Aaron Rodgers, same thing. I'm trying to think of somebody else. That was what I always knew
Russell that would happen. Wilson.
Russell Wilson, there you go. You know, Patrick Mahomes. We'll see. We'll see if you know, if he changes those numbers around. But that was something I always did know about Jameis Winston. I said it many times on this podcast. It was like, you know, year two, year three, and we're like projecting, and Jameis, you know, his 6 year, and he's going to have to make this $120 million a year, you know, or with $22, $25, $33 million a year. Mm-hmm. And I said, what will happen is he'll sign this huge contract to be like the second or first or third quarterback, you know, highest paid quarterback, and then immediately, like, think something that Tom Brady did and Peyton Manning did also, immediately restructured it to be able to free up money to get people on. I'm that's just the type of Jameis type of player Jameis is, and you saw it when he went to the Saints, put his entire future and everything, put all the money on in the background for his future. Like, mm-hmm. get paid $1 million and you have a shot to be a successor to Drew Brees with this already built roster. And he was like, okay. So I don't know why I kind of jumped in there and did that, but what were we talking about? Something about Tom Brady and Cam Brady.
We were talking about the difference between Tom Brady taking less money,
right,
and Julio Jones
wanting
more money
because
he saw his quarterback get more money. And
yeah. That's how I always thought Jameis was as a player. Like I said in this podcast many times back in the I was just making think people that there was a back loop there. I was gonna tell the whole story all again.
That would be funny.
People like, was it a skip? Yeah, I bet.
Deja vu all over again. But I do think that Bucks fans are crazy if they're more concerned about the Falcons than they are.
No, yeah. I'm not saying they're more concerned. And yeah, I flubbed that question all over the place. But there are a certain sect of people that I see on social media and that I talk to that they're not writing the Falcons off as like a team that's going to be in the top 10 of the draft or the top half of the draft next year, like right away. You know, they think that the Falcons might surprise. It's that they might surprise people this year, that type of deal.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, like watch out for the Falcons. Like they might sneak in there at a wild card.
You mean like how a lot of national pundits for like 5 or 6 years kept saying, watch out for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
The Browns are going to be good. Yeah. Browns are going to be good. And
I like what the Browns are doing.
Like what they're doing. And then,
you
and then
all about Atlanta, you're just like, there's so much. There's yeah.
And then they're 4-12. You know, but I do think, and I thought it was funny. Like, did you see D'Orlando's face on YouTube and on Periscope when I brought up Cordero Patterson? He was just like, why are we talking about him?
Yeah.
because there ain't much that you brought in this year. Mike Davis, as they mentioned, I mean, that's why I had to ask him about the running game. The running game has been disgusting.
Yeah, definitely. And I wanted to get to some girly talk too, but I really wanted, but as you know, like I can't help it. You know, some people are crazy about Bigfoot. Some people are crazy about UFOs. Right now I'm crazy about the access and I need to know what the hell's going on, because basically the NFL, the way I'm seeing it right now, and I feel a lot better after talking to D'Orlando, but before this interview, I was like, the NFL is like, ah, screw you. Like, what are you going to do? Like, no, you can't have access. Well, okay. What are you going to do? You know, the NFL can go like, I'm going to schedule 3 Zoom meetings. And guess what? All of you are going to be there and all of you are going to write. So there's nothing you can do. They had no leverage whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I was screaming into the ether a year ago. And then about 2-3 weeks ago, it comes down that, you know, they're like, the NFL is like floating the idea that there might not be open locker rooms. And you see Twitter explode with all these beat writers going, what? And I'm like, God damn it, I told you. Last year, this was going to happen. And so I've been, you know, anytime I can talk about it, anytime I can listen, I apologize if it's something you don't care to listen about. Actually, I don't. Start your own podcast. But he was the guy to talk to, and I didn't even know it until like you'd already booked him. Or actually, we already started talking about bringing him on, and I was excited to bring him on. And man, he's a delight.
Yeah, you were like, I liked Orlando, and I said he's he was the former president of the Pro Football Writers Association.
What?
We can talk about access. No, but access is big because, you know,
it's a huge deal right now that no one seems to care about.
Yeah, and the memo that went out about vaccinated versus unvaccinated. That we got into a little bit. Oh my God. Yeah. The vaccinated, if you don't know, vaccinated players, as Ren pointed out, you do not have to do daily testing. You do not have to wear masks. You do not have to do social distancing.
Everything's the same.
You do not have any restrictions on travel. You can meet with your family. You can go out to eat. You can do whatever you want if you're vaccinated. If you're unvaccinated, you might as well wrap yourself in bubble wrap and stick yourself in a vacuum.
You can't eat with the teams.
Yep.
You can't have meetings with the team.
Like, yep. You better hope that your Zoom game is on point.
Yeah, so basically, they're leaving up the players to put pressure on each other, because like it's like, well, the offensive line could be meeting in the nice air conditioned offensive line room right now. But since number 65 over here won't get his goddamn vaccination, we have to meet outside in the 98 degree heat with 102 humidity.
Or we send him home and we have to do this over Zoom and make this really bad.
Yeah, you know, it's just like
something we don't care about.
And that's I mean, the NFL's doing it like they're making people do it without making them do it. They're making their life so hard. And this is another big thing that big corporations do. They make your life so goddamn hard that you have no other choice. You have no other choice. Like, yeah, you know, okay, well, yeah, you get to drive to work. It's a 5-minute drive. You have to walk to work. That makes it an hour and 20-minute walk. Oh, and you have to walk home. So now we're 3 hours in your commute. Or, you know, you can get the vaccination. We'll give you a car. And you could, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like,
I know
they're giving them no choice without making them do it is what they're doing.
Yeah. You can not get vaccinated, but we're going to make your life hell.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And unfortunately, I'm afraid to say that I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I'm not vaccinated. Are you vaccinated?
You are
vaccinated. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not vaccinated, but it has nothing to do. Yeah. Cause you're on the field with the Rays all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with I don't trust it or I don't think it's a dumb idea or my personal friend. It has nothing to do with that. I'm just like, I spend most of my time at home, you know. My job, they don't care about it at all. No one's even asked me. Like during the pandemic, I'd have to wear a mask from the door to the back. And once I got in the back, no one had a mask on. And that was it. The end of the story. And it was like, okay. So it's just a matter of I'm going to have to go get it. And again, like I said, I don't think it's a bad idea. There is a small percentage of complications. Now there's like heart inflammation now, you know, being linked to it. So I don't think I'm in danger of any of those things, mm-hmm. but if I want to, you know, go to training camp, I have read the rules of the hoops I have to go through as an unvaccinated possible credentialed media member and the rules that I have to go through if I am vaccinated. And they're just as bad as the players that are vaccinated and yeah. not vaccinated. So
yeah, because if media members that are not vaccinated, you've got to wear a mask the whole time. You got to stay in this little area. You don't get any. And then if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. You can kind of
do whatever
you need to do. It's
do nice your job easy. Just like it never happened. The pandemic never happened. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, what are you gonna do? You're going to get vaccinated.
You know what we're going to do? You're going to get your ass vaccinated. We can even just do the one shot Johnson & Johnson. You only have to worry about it once. And then,
it has nothing to do with that. It's just kind of like, I'm kind of one of those, like, I will never buy a new car. Okay, rephrase that. I will never buy a car in the first year that model's being made because all the kinks aren't worked out yet. You know what I mean? Like, wait till year two. Like, hey, the new Corvette's out. Okay, I'm going to wait till that particular style model, all the, you know, everything they've changed, or like a brand new car, the new Chrysler, blah blah blah. Like, I'm waiting till year two, even if I really, really, really want it, because I need for everything to be working. And that's kind of where I'm with the vaccine. Like, I'll go get it if I have to. No big deal. I'm not going to sweat it. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to have nightmares about it. Don't care either way. I would like to wait to see if the vaccine mutates, and if the vaccine that everyone has is effective or not. If it's not effective, that means they're going to make another one and I'll have that one. That's kind of really where I'm at.
So, you know, and for me, I'm all about, you know, people's personal freedoms as well. You don't want to get vaccinated. That's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't cough on me.
That's right.
Anyway, 85.
By the way, I love this comment here. This is Ren. I thought you day traded. Yeah, he does day trade.
It's 10.
10. I thought you day trade.
10. I day trade at 10 o'clock one time. That's it.
we trade at the end of week or at the middle of week 8, right? Because that's the trade deadline.
There you go. That's when the big moves happen.
That's right.
Anyway, do we have anything else?
I don't have anything additional to add. Leave us a rating and a review. And until next time, Ren, you ready?